We may begin to get familiar with recognizing awareness itself. And I just want to say that that's not necessarily what we're trying to do. Again, you know, this is very much a receptive kind of practice of just noticing how the mind is working, attending to objects, noticing the qualities of objects, noticing relationships between objects, noticing the awareness. And as we do get familiar, I mean, as that begins to become more of a sense, almost a felt sense of being aware, we can have a tendency to want to make it happen. It can feel quite pleasant at times. And we may have the idea that that's what we're supposed to do. There can be a kind of a clarity that can come, a sense of, at times, not even always actually, when we're aware of awareness, sometimes there's the sense that we're not clear about what the objects are, but we're clear, we know that that we are aware. There can be that sense of have clarity in a way. And we want to gravitate towards that pleasant experience. There's that habit of wanting the pleasant. This definitely happened for me. I thought, you know, in practicing with Sayadaw, when I first began to really touch into that experience or knowing, just really clearly knowing, being aware that I was aware, I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing. So I tried to find my way back to it. I kept trying to make that be how I was with experience, that I was knowing the awareness. And gave myself a big headache trying to make that happen. So I described this to Sayadaw. And he said, he laughed and he said, "You're trying to do that?" And this was one of those times where he said, "You know, yeah, I talk a lot about being aware of awareness, but you know, nothing I say is something that you're supposed to do. It's more of a pointing to what might be able to be seen, what might be possible to see." He said, "So don't try to do it. Just notice when there's the kind of the connection with being aware of awareness, and when there's more of the awareness of objects, the attention will kind of naturally move between them at times." And so that became more my interest, is kind of that flow of sometimes being, you know, more connected to the experience of the particular qualities of the object itself, the pressure or tension or vibration or pulsing, or you know, the mind just get really interested in the texture of the experience itself. And then sometimes it kind of stepped back more to the quality of being aware. So that shifting became more not trying to hold on to. And I also kind of got interested in when was the attention pulled to an object, that kind of movement, the kind of the shift of attention I talked about earlier. At times, after we really, you know, get more familiar with being aware of awareness, there can be the experience of knowing clearly that we're aware, but not having a clue what the object really is. this experience happens to us at times where we might have the experience something like we're recognizing experience and we're kind of aware of body sensations or sounds or other things kind of going on in kind of the distance. But that doesn't really seem to be what, they don't really seem to be touching us much. So there's a kind of awareness, a kind of a very remote awareness of other experience. Sometimes people will report to me, awareness is not aware of anything. There's nothing happening. And I'll say, okay, do you feel the body at all? Do you hear sounds at all? Yeah, but you know, it's not really, you know, it doesn't really feel like that's what awareness is with. So that kind of experience of the remoteness of experience, the remoteness of particular sensations of experience, but knowing, you know, knowing that you're aware, but not knowing clearly what the attention is kind of connecting with. In my own experience, this can happen. One of the ways this can happen is when the attention is more connected with an experience that's unfamiliar, that we don't really know how to consciously recognize or identify. Sometimes this may be a kind of diffuse or vast, subtle experience. Yesterday we talked about broad, pervading experience that was obvious. This kind of experience may be more pervading and subtle. The experience of something like calm, even. You know, maybe in that state of aware of a lot of things kind of remotely happening, the mind is just really calm. But it's not that there's less familiarity with the actual experience of calm. And so there's not the kind of knowing of that, knowing what the object is. One teacher, Michelle McDonald, talked about this at one point, saying, you know, she was just so unfamiliar with calm that when it began to happen for her, it was like such a strange experience. And she began kind of questioning her. It's like, well, is this calm? Is that what this is? So at times when it feels like we know that we're aware, but we're not clear about the awareness, I had a kind of very startling experience like this at one point. It was on a long retreat. I was in Burma and practicing for quite a long stretch of time. And I just really noticed the mind was riveted. That was the quality. It was riveted. It was fascinated. But I had no idea what it was fascinated by. So that I could know that I was aware and I could know there was interest, but no clue what there was interest about. I just hung out with that, just noticed that. I never got to find out what the mind was interested in that situation. Just noticed, yeah, the mind is interested in something. So we don't have to know what the objects of awareness are necessarily. And this is partly why it's useful to begin to recognize awareness itself. Sometimes in that place of, especially earlier on in practice, when there's the quality of not knowing what the object is, sometimes we can doubt that we're aware. Because we are used to gauging our awareness based on knowing the object and knowing what the object is. And so when it's less clear what the object is, we may feel like, you know, do I know that I'm aware? Is this really awareness? And so as we begin to check in or touch into the actual experience or familiarity with awareness itself, we can feel okay that, yep, I know I'm aware, and I don't know what the object is. So that's a way I've met that experience. It's like, yep, aware, don't know the object. Object not clear. That's a way of meeting that experience that acknowledges exactly what's happening. We don't have to figure out what the object is. We're aware, don't know what the object is. Don't even know the shape or texture of the object. Just aware and not knowing what the object is. Sometimes in that place too, people think, well, that's aware of pure awareness. And I don't think so. I think more it's the, when that happens, there's some quality of mind that's there that's just not clear. Awareness of pure awareness, there are times in the suttas that there's a description of kind of non-manifesting consciousness or just pure consciousness that's not landing with an object. And that kind of awareness, the description of that in the suttas is kind of like, if there's light coming into a building from a window in the west wall, it will land on the east wall, and you know that. And then he keeps going, and what if that east wall isn't there? Well, it'll land on the ground. What if there's no ground? Well, then it'll land on water. This is based on the understanding of India at the time. And if there's no water, well, then it doesn't land anywhere. The awareness not landing anywhere, that kind of experience is maybe touching into a state of freedom. One description of a state of freedom, a cessation of objects. But if there's any sense of body at all, it's not just that quality. So I would say just in that moment, there's the awareness, just touch into the quality that of that sense that you know. And know that and be aware that the object is not clear. Aware, you don't know clearly what the object is. And maybe even recognizing aware of vague, of not vague, but of just like distant experience. Sometimes it feels like we're just surrounded by almost like cotton balls, and there's not much really impinging on us. But there's awareness that there is sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. Sometimes in that place, the mind is so calm, so quiet, so balanced, that the familiar kind of impingement of experience, which often comes with a reactivity, even a subtle reactivity, that reactivity diminished. So just aware, object not clear. Clearly aware, object not clear. The exploration of checking the attitude in this practice. As we check the attitude, we become aware of what we could call filters on awareness. A filter of greed, of wanting things to be a certain way. We are, before we become aware of that filter, the awareness is kind of functioning through that attitude. As we become aware of that attitude, we may recognize, oh, that's what's happening. And so we become aware of the attitude. And then there's a shift in how the awareness is working. More moving in the direction of wise attitude without pushing towards or moving away from experience. And so we get a little bit of a taste, perhaps, of a closer to what wise mindfulness is. And that's when we talk about being aware of awareness, we're talking about awareness of being mindful. And in this practice, we're inclining towards wise mindfulness, that kind of mindfulness that is just interested in experience, as experience, non-reactive, non-judgmental. So those qualities come with wise mindfulness. These are qualities that infuse wise mindfulness. So we can also be aware of those qualities. And as we step into more awareness of the attitude and become aware of the mind that's non-reactive, we're touching into some of the qualities of that wise mindfulness, of the awareness that is the kind of awareness that frees us. So the exploration around the attitude kind of almost begins to step us back closer and closer to recognizing the experience of awareness itself. This I think is part of the power of this style of practice, where we're curious about the mind in relationship to experience as we step into fewer and fewer filters on the mind in relationship to experience, then we just start to see the mind in relationship to experience in a more, with those qualities of awareness and wisdom functioning together. Over the last few days, there have been a few questions about awareness in the submitted in the advance form. So I thought I'd speak to a few of those at this point. So there was a question on thoughts about awareness as being a continuum rather than as on or off. And and I do sometimes speak about, you know, the kind of the recognition of awareness arising and the distinction between being aware and not being aware, as if it were like, you know, either on or off. But there is kind of the experience, I'd say the experience of awareness can have a flavor of sometimes being strong and sometimes being weak. And I talked about the experience of building the momentum of awareness, and the analogy of the scooter, and you know, the place where when we're riding a scooter, we start noticing the scooter gets a little wobbly, and that we might start noticing awareness get a little wobbly. That's kind of on that continuum, that as the awareness kind of weakens a little bit, it kind of loses the feeling, as it maybe gets a little dispersed or something like that, where it feels like it's kind of there, but the mind is still kind of in its thoughts. It's not completely lost, but it's also not really completely here. What Joseph sometimes calls more or less mindful, you know, just that kind of in-between kind of state. In the Theravada tradition, there's an understanding that comes through primarily through the Abhidhamma, the Buddhist psychology of the workings of the mind, that there are successive moments of experience. A moment of perception, consciousness, experience arises and passes away, and then it's succeeded by another one. And there's a conditioning connection between successive moments of experience. The description of those, that the moment to moment kind of arising of experience in the Abhidhamma, those moments are described as vanishingly small. Something like 17 trillion moments like that happen within the blink of an eye. So we're probably not going to see a single moment. We tend to experience the experience is feeling more the flavor of a collection of those moments. And so the Theravada understanding is that in a moment like that, awareness is either here or not. In a moment like that, a mind state is either there or not. So we also have the experience perhaps of our mind states of fear or anger or confusion, you know, having strength or weakness, of being stronger or less strong. And the understanding in the Buddhist psychology, in the Abhidhamma, is that when something feels stronger, when a mind state feels stronger, it's happening in a lot more of those mind moments. And so the experience of it feeling like awareness is really strong means it's happening in many, many of those mind moments. And the experience of it feeling a little weaker means that maybe there, you know, maybe 50% of those mind moments are mindful or something like that. So the experience is what the practice looks at, not trying to overlay some idea of this moment to moment, you know, momentary nature of experience. I've had sometimes people would say, I've had teachers say that you're either mindful and or there's a hindrance. You know, that if you have a hindrance, there's not mindfulness. And that didn't quite resonate for me because, you know, I could be aware that I was angry or frustrated. And the teaching that a moment of mindfulness, when a moment of mindfulness is there, when wise mindfulness is there, a hindrance is not there, is in this moment to moment description. So the experience is that, yes, we can know that we are aware of a hindrance. So and I think the teachings in the suttas, and I love like looking at what the suttas say versus what the kind of later commentaries speak about. And the Abhidhamma is an early later commentary. It was composed pretty soon after the Buddha, within a couple hundred years after the Buddha. But the suttas really speak to the experiential nature of what's happening. The Satipatthana Sutta, in fact, says, you know, yes, the fourth foundation of mindfulness, you can know the presence or absence of hindrances. Be aware of that. So the kind of the sense of the continuum of mindfulness, yes, it does feel like that. Sometimes it feels stronger, sometimes it feels weaker. And my experience as I get more and more familiar with being aware, there's kind of like, it feels like the mindfulness is more right below the surface pretty much all the time. It's very accessible. Sometimes I'll get lost but it doesn't take much for the mindfulness to reconnect. And there is a kind of a thread of being aware that's more pervasive. I'm not 100% mindful. It's not that strong continuity that develops when I'm on retreat. But there is a kind of the real thread of being aware and really aware when the mind starts moving in the direction of greed, aversion, and delusion. It's much more kind of attuned to that. So there's definitely the experience of a continuity or a continuum of awareness that we touch into through how we experience being aware. And this, I would say that this form, this kind of awareness, you know, becoming aware of our awareness and becoming aware of the objects, the question pointed to this. It's useful to practice and exercise the muscle of awareness. And by awareness here, we mean the conscious recognition of experience. I talked the other day about the knowing, the perceiving, Those always happen. Every moment, there's some aspects of mental experience that are said to happen in every single mind moment. All 17 trillion in the blink of an eye. Every single one of those has knowing happening. Perception, feeling, they all have those qualities. There's a few things that happen with every single mind moment. Mindfulness is not one of those. Mindfulness is sometimes there and sometimes not there. And the feeling of it being stronger and weaker at times, yes, that is the feeling of it. So just noticing that, noticing sometimes I'll notice that, yeah, I'm aware, and it does have a kind of a light touch. Sometimes I feel more, or it feels like the awareness is kind of on this, on a little on the surface, or kind of available to know if something strong arises. And at other times, there's much more the kind of awareness that happened in that moment that I described the other day of seeing the whole arising of a pattern happen in a split second. So they're just for different flavors. And I would say the continuity, what we're moving towards, is more and more moments of mindfulness in that momentary way. It feels like it's strengthening or getting stronger. Another question. A few days ago, and again this morning, I kind of mentioned that we're not trying to turn around and look at awareness itself. That's partly, somebody was asking why that is. Why are we not trying to do that? The function of awareness, what mindfulness does is reveal experience. Reveal body sensations, reveal to our conscious awareness. Mindfulness like makes there be the conscious awareness of body sensations and sounds and sights and smells and touches and things going on in the mind. And so trying to turn around and look at awareness in some pure way, we're not really connecting with the function of awareness, the function of awareness being to meet experience. So I described a kind of a stepping back or kind of an awareness that we're aware and there are objects. The experience or what we are aware of in that whole experience sometimes can lean more towards the objects and sometimes more towards the quality of being aware. But as I said, the objects don't disappear in that. When it feels like there aren't objects, it's usually because there's some subtle experience that's not clearly seen or clearly known. So we're not trying to turn around and look at awareness itself. We're trying to understand how awareness functions, which is its relationship to receiving objects, to being with experience. The question also included, is awareness our true nature, with true nature in quotes? And I think, true nature, there's a lot of ideas about what true nature is. I don't know what the particular flavor of true nature here is. I would say something like, that what is nature? What is the nature of our experience? What is the nature of our human experience? Is that conditioned phenomenon arise and pass away? There's experience that comes and goes, and moment by moment, what's cultivated in a moment conditions the next moment. That's kind of the nature of experience. Mindfulness itself is something that arises and passes in those conditions. True nature often kind of gives the sense of some like pervading thing. And the Buddhist teachings explicitly point to nothing that's a pervading thing. Nothing in experience that's pervading and permanent like that. It is talked about that Nibbana has a quality of reliability, of permanence, of happiness. But Nibbana is also described as the absence of, not the presence of something. The absence of greed, aversion, and delusion. We can have the curiosity of what's the nature of awareness. What's the nature of this kind of mindfulness that meets experience in this way? The wise mindfulness, talked about, kind of stepping back into that by noticing those filters, those attitudes on experience, and maybe seeing some of those drop away or having them kind of become what we're aware of instead of how we're aware. So we start stepping back towards that, those qualities of the nature of wise mindfulness has some of the qualities of, well, the kind of the clarity of awareness that it reveals experience. It has the qualities of not having, not being judgmental, not being pulled or pushed by anything, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So it's got that the balanced quality of mind, the equanimity. It can also have the flavor of connectedness, of love. So as we step into what is the experience of the nature of that kind of awareness? We feel all kinds of other qualities that are associated with it. Love and compassion, sometimes joy. And those qualities do maybe have a little bit of the Northern Lights quality. Sometimes there's more just a balance and an equanimity, the feeling of the non-judgmental quality in there, and it doesn't particularly have a sense of joy. It's just no problem. And sometimes the flavor of love comes in and the flavor of joy comes in. So there can be a kind of a weaving or a just different flavors that can be felt with that wise attention. Then another question. I once heard a teacher say, awareness of anger is not angry. They went on to give other examples of this. Awareness of something is not itself. So I say this also at times, awareness of sleepiness is not sleepy. Awareness of frustration is not frustrated. Awareness of confusion is not confused. This is that quality of the awareness that's just revealing, or kind of, we talk about there's the experience, the what of experience, and the awareness of it. The awareness itself is not affected by the experience. It just knows it. That's its job. Its job is to reveal the qualities of the experience. But it's not affected by that. The awareness is not affected by what is happening. There's a kind of an independence there between the awareness and what is happening. It's like awareness is this, sometimes the Buddha uses the analogy of trying to paint space or something. We can't put paint on space. The space does not absorb the quality of the paint. Another analogy, the mirror analogy that I used the other day. You have a mirror and it's reflecting something. The mirror isn't affected by what it's reflecting. As soon as that thing that it's reflecting goes away, the mirror is just reflecting the next thing. So the mirror is not the thing it's reflecting. So this kind of also begins to point back into what's the nature of awareness itself. It's not affected by what it's aware of. It simply presents it into our conscious awareness. This is what's happening. That's the nature of awareness. And that begins to point to a question that somebody asked about the nature of awareness. And in looking at the question, or say that what the person wrote, there's not so much a question in there, but more of a kind of a statement of, you know, the curiosity of exploring the qualities of awareness as a part of their own practice, the love that comes there with it, the vastness, the kind of the sense of connection and care that comes with it. So that's what I was pointing to a few minutes ago, that as we step back into using the checking the attitude, we step back into what are the qualities of awareness when there is not reactivity. We taste some of these flavors. And then we also may get more familiar with that experience of that sense of being in that field of awareness with the connection of love at times, of non-reactivity, of balance of mind. And that's a beautiful place to live. And I would say sometimes we can kind of preference that. There was a question about spiritual bypass the other day, and this feels maybe like there can be a little bit of connection here. If we're kind of preferencing that, or trying to be in that space, we may miss that there's some kind of delusion arising, or a kind of sense of pushing away, just a subtle pushing away of, oh, there's something that's not loving here. Oh, but I know awareness is really loving, so I'm going to be there, and almost pushing away. It doesn't have to be a pushing away. You know, when we kind of land in that space, it can be more like, yep, that's there. And there's this feeling of love encompassing everything. So I think it's important in using that, and we can use that kind of connection with the experience of recognizing awareness to kind of land us in that place where there is a feeling of connection and it is a feeling of balance of mind, but honesty with ourselves about when something comes up where there's a wobble. If we can at times be in that space of connected, caring, aware, we also might be much more able to be aware of when there is a sense of, oh, something's coming in that's kind of taking me away from that. That deserves its attention rather than being shut down or trying to say, oh, you don't belong here. It's like, no, that too is worth seeing because it's coming up, it's conditioned from experience. And so can it be held and seen clearly? A question. I think Sayadaw's distinguishing between the observing mind and the experiencing mind is helpful. If I'm correct, he says that one cannot meditate if there are defilements in the observing mind. In that case, the defilements act as colored glasses that tint or warp the awareness of experience in line with their nature. So when a defilement becomes known to awareness, we know it moves out and clears the observing mind and becomes an object in the experiencing mind. So that, yes, that is a way to think about it, but I wouldn't say that we can't meditate if there are defilements in the observing mind, because we have to start where we are, which is with a lot of greed, aversion, and confusion. I think that there can be more or less defilements in how we're observing. And sometimes we might see. So, for example, I gave that description of being so present and aware and available for what was happening, a lot of clarity in the experience. And then I thought to check the attitude, and I found some greed, wanting it to continue. So the greed was subtle. The greed was in there. But the meditation was going on. And so, you know, I think that the idea that if there's any defilement in the observing mind, it means meditation isn't happening. I don't think Saito quite says it that way. So, you know, I think give ourselves a little bit of a break. You know, it's like if it's like, oh, I might as well not meditate, or I have to get rid of this defilement in order to meditate, or I have to pull it out of the observing mind. Sometimes we can't. Sometimes we can know it's there. It's almost more like that, like we have a lens on, like we've got green glasses on, and we become aware that we have green glasses on, but we can't take the glasses off and look at them. But we know that we have the green glasses on. We can know there's delusion functioning in the mind and not be able to stop the delusion. So I wouldn't make it quite so like cut and dried there. That idea that we can't meditate if there's a defilement in the observing mind at all, any subtle, even subtle defilements in the observing mind, we wouldn't be able to get anywhere. I talked a little bit yesterday about the relying on this, abandon that, you know, that we can become aware. At times, you know, we can become aware that there's a strong defilement working, and we might kind of shift to turning away from that to attend to something else. And some of that turning away is happening out of aversion. Some of it's happening out of compassion and understanding that it's not useful to be caught in that sticky situation. And so sometimes, yes, that it's like to not act in that situation just because there's aversion there, and just stay stuck in that, be caught and swamped in the non-awareness of that sticky situation, versus acting out of a little bit of aversion to move away from the experience. It's preferable to connect with the, you know, if you can, to connect with the quality or the sense of, yeah, this is not helpful. It would be helpful to move away from it with that compassionate mind rather than the aversive mind. But often we don't have that leeway. Sometimes the aversion is part of the motivation. And yet that kind of stepping away from that really sticky aversion to a slightly less sticky aversion can help us to have a little bit more capacity to meet experience. In my own practice, this kind of unfolded a lot by, you know, almost using the investigation to let myself kind of step away from something that was so painful. So there was a little bit of greed in the using of the investigation. And I at some point I became aware that quality of greed was there. But earlier in my practice, it wouldn't have been useful to not step away from, you know, it wouldn't have been useful to not step away from that experience just because there was some greed in the mind or some aversion in the mind about not wanting that to be there. At some point in my practice, I become much more cognizant of the painful quality of the wanting to investigate. And at that point, that was when it was useful to begin to investigate that particular quality of the defilement. So there's a kind of a staged release. We can think of the continuum of defilements as well. You know, the stickier the defilement, the more painful it is. And then, you know, it may be that there is a little bit of aversion along with compassion that's helping us to step away from that experience. At some point, you will have to notice that is conditioning, that aversion. And for me, I really noticed how connected the investigation had become with wanting to get away from unpleasant and move towards not having suffering. And it was a couple year investigation, a couple year process of understanding how the investigation could happen without that greed, without that aversion. So the yeah, I that seems like enough there. Can we not turn and look at awareness because it is the part that sees? It's kind of like that. We could think of that. It's kind of like the eye. We can't turn and look at the eye. It's more like we know we're seeing. And when our eyes are closed, we can't see. When our eyes are open, we can see, but we can't see the eye itself. It's kind of like that, but there is the quality of being able to know some of the function of how awareness works. Like we might be able to know like how the eye is seeing. Sometimes it might, we can know, for instance, those of us who have nearsightedness or farsightedness. Sometimes we might be able to see things closer, see things far away, but not be able to see the other. So there's a kind of knowing something about the how the eye is working. Can we take refuge in awareness? This was another part of the question, another question that was submitted too. I think we take awareness a refuge more in wisdom and understanding that comes with wise mindfulness. So the awareness that is supportive does come with wisdom. And yet, the traditional refuges are the refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. The refuge in the Buddha could be understood as taking refuge in our capacity to be aware. That possibility of waking up, the possibility of waking up fully and the freedom that comes with that waking up. The refuge in the Dharma, we can look at more deeply as the refuge in the truth of experience. I pointed to this the other day when we talked about, how can we take refuge in anything in experience when it's all impermanent and unreliable? And there is a truth to this too around awareness. Why I wouldn't necessarily say we're taking refuge in awareness itself, because awareness comes and goes. Awareness is unreliable. It's a mental formation that's sometimes present, sometimes not present. When it's present, there can be a sense of something that is the what we take refuge in there almost is the quality of understanding that comes when awareness is present. So the understanding of the unreliable nature of experience, we take refuge in the aligning ourselves with the truth of that. Dharma sometimes is translated as nature or truth. And so, we can take refuge in understanding the nature of experience, and awareness helps to reveal that. So it might feel like we're taking refuge in awareness. But awareness itself is unreliable. And so it's not really what we're taking refuge in. We're taking refuge in the understandings that awareness reveals. We take a refuge in the truth of understanding that things are unreliable, understanding that things are impermanent, understanding that things are uncontrollable. That's where the refuge is. Yeah, we always get into some real complex questions when we start talking about awareness. I'll take one or two more from the chat and then open it up to the room too. You said several times if you aren't aware of an object, there's probably or almost always one there, only a vague, diffuse, or subtle. But if there's no object, is that a view of emptiness? Emptiness, I think that the idea of emptiness as being nothingness, as it being no, no experience. Emptiness, the understanding of emptiness that the Buddha's definition in the suttas is empty of self and what belongs to self. The understanding of emptiness is it doesn't mean that there's no experience. It means there's an understanding of that experience is a tumbling on, a conditioned arising, no self needed to make things happen. Just conditioned phenomenon rolling on. That can be an experience of emptiness, the understanding of the process nature of experience, empty of self and what belongs to self.